build a cannon big enough to destroy the walls of Babylon itself. I would have done it for the Sultan, if he would have seen me. Now it appears I have to go home, every bit as disgraced as my father and mother said I would be. She shook her head bitterly and turned to walk away. Wait, what is your name?
Urbana,
of Transylvania. I am Radu, and I think we may be able to help each other. He took the bundle of parchments from her. Go get your things, and I will introduce you to my wife. Urbana raised an eyebrow. I have no intention of joining anyone's harem. Radu held back a laugh. It might have been misinterpreted as mean. I assure you, that is the last thing on my mind. I was born in Transylvania, and I know what it is to be a stranger in a new land. Allow me to help you as I would want someone to help my own sister.
If you try anything unseemly, I am fully capable of blowing up your home.
This time, Radu let himself laugh. My sister would accept help in much the same spirit. Come, I will take you to my home. You are going to love my wife. With Nazira's help, he would be able to determine whether Urbana could be trusted. If so, Radu had a creeping, joyful suspicion he was about to once again prove to Mahmed just how valuable he could be. February. Lada knew punishing Transylvania for everything that had gone wrong in the past year did not make perfect strategic sense. But it felt better than anything else, and so Transylvania burned. Lada was not happy, but she was busy, and that was almost the same. God's wounds, she whispered, trying to fasten binding cloth tightly enough around her breasts so that they would not chafe against her chainmail. It was difficult to dress herself in the woods, but this arrangement was far preferable to the one the governor of Brasov had proposed, before he sent an assassin after her. After agreeing to see what men and funds he could free up to support Larda's bid for the throne, he had suggested she stay with him rather than going back where no lady belongs. She belonged with her men, even if it was freezing. She shivered behind the blanket she had hung to give herself some privacy. She nearly had the binding cloth right, but her cold fingers fumbled the knot. She threw the cloth to the ground and shrieked in rage. Larda? Bogdan asked. He hovered on the other side of the blanket. Do you need help? Not from you. Leave me alone. After a few more infuriating minutes, she finally had everything in place. She pulled on a tunic, clean, which was a novelty, and rejoined her men. You need help, Bogdan said, his voice low so no one would overhear. I do not need help. You are a lady. You should not have to do these things for yourself. Larda gave him a flat, angry stare. Bogdan, when have I ever been a lady? He returned her angry look with a soft, shy smile. You have always been a lady to me. Maybe you do not know me very well after all. Bogdan put one rough hand out, holding it palm up to show the scar from when they had married as children. I know you. Before Larda could decide how to respond or how to feel, Petru drew her attention. The last caravan they robbed had been filled with fine clothing, pieces of which were strewn about their camp. Trousers hung from trees, shirts danced in the breeze. The bright colours on bare branches gave everything a festival air. Petru wrestled with an intricately brocaded vest, struggling to get it across his shoulders. He spun in one direction and then the other. Nikolai watched, lips a single straight line, but eyes dancing with mirth. That would fit better if it were designed for a man, Matej said as he walked by. Matej's purse was full now, but he still looked hungry. Petru stopped spinning and ripped off the vest in horror. Nikolai burst into laughter. You could have told me, Petru said. But it set off the color of your eyes so nicely. Petru glared murderously. Then he looked over at Larda and held the vest out. She raised a single eyebrow at the delicate colours and needlework. Muttering to himself, Petru threw the vest at Nikolai's head and walked away. Lada wore a long tunic over trousers, all black except for a red sash tied at her waist. A thick black cloak, lined with glorious fur, kept her warmer than she had been in months. Her boots, finely tooled leather decorated with delicate patterns, were the only women's clothing she wore. She had grown accustomed to wearing her hair tied in cloth, but instead of Yanacheri white, she used black. Over that, she wore a fur cap. They had all ceased wearing the Yanacheri caps and uniforms long ago, but some kept a few reminders of their lives as slaves, a sash here, a knife there. Bogdan used the white cloth from his cap to clean his weapons. Many of the men used theirs for much less savory cleaning. "Has Stefan returned?" Nikolai finished buttoning his vest, then drew his cloak closed. "Not yet. Must we wait for him before having any fun? We have plenty of men. Tonight is not a night for plenty. Tonight is a night for speed. And secrecy." Bogdan shifted closer to Lada. "I will come. Not you." His face fell. Gritting her teeth, Lada continued. "I need to leave you in charge of the camp." He shrugged and stomped away. She did not know if he stomped because he was angry or simply because he was large. The truth was, she could not bring Bogdan tonight because he would object to what she had in mind. Nikolai might as well. Petru, she did not know. But Matei... "Matei, just the two of us." "What are you going to do?" Nikolai asked. Lada sheathed her knives, one at either wrist, one at her right ankle. A large container of lamp oil hung from a strap slung over her shoulder. "I am going to visit the governor of Brasov."
"Is that really necessary?"
"He betrayed me. Why promise me aid and then try to have me killed? He must have been gathering information, and when he passed that information along, the return instruction was to eliminate me. Either he is working for Hungary or in league with the Dineshd prince. I want to know which one. If it is the Dineshd prince, we have nothing to fear. We already know he wants us dead. If it is the Hungarians, we have a new problem."
"How are you going to get to him? The city will be well guarded."
Lada met Matei's eyes. He nodded grimly. He would be up for the task, and Lada knew she was up for anything, always. They slid through the night-black streets of the Valachian section. It was a rambling warren of shacks pushed up to the very edge of the walls. Some of the homes were built against the wall itself, using the stones as an outer wall. A few times Lada and Matei heard patrols, but it was a simple matter of altering course to avoid detection. The shacks built against the wall provided a benefit. Bracing against two homes within spitting distance of each other, they pushed their way to a roof. Matei boosted Lada up onto the wall itself. After a few tense breaths to make certain she was undetected, she lowered a rope so Matei could follow. Within the walls of the inner city, even the air felt different, cleaner, wealthier, more privileged, with fewer desperate mouths pulling at it. But the scent of charred wood lurked beneath everything. It filled Lada with something like peace. Lada knew exactly where to go, but it took 2 hours for them to make a journey of a dozen streets. They skirted the now cold ruins of the homes that had burned, hiding in them when necessary. It was good that Lada had dressed in black, because the char would have ruined anything else. Patrols tromped through the streets with aggravating consistency. Finally making it close to the governor's house did not simplify things, though. 3 guards were stationed at the door, while others ringed the perimeter. Lada had counted on breaking in through a first-floor window, but that was not possible. Matei waited in silence, but she could feel the question pulsing off him. What now? Lada raised her eyes to the night sky to curse the stars, but the lines of the roofs caught her attention. The houses were built close together, elbowing each other for space. Sometimes the alleys between them were so narrow one had to turn sideways to make it through. She did not need to break into the governor's house. She just needed to break into one of his less protected neighbors' homes. "How do you feel about churches?"
she whispered. Matei frowned at her in the dark.
Did you notice how in the countryside all the churches are fortified? They provide shelter for everyone during an attack. But here in the heart of the city, the church is beautiful and cold. They do not let any of the Valachians into worship. I think we should warm up the church.
She held out her container of oil. Understanding lit Matei's face as he took it from her. He disappeared into the darkness. Though Larda had more men now, she always trusted her first few above all others. Matei would do the job. Nikolai and Bogdan might have balked at setting fire to a holy building, but how could something be holy if it was denied to Valachians? She slid from her shadowed nook and raced through an exposed alley. Four houses from the governor's was a three-story home with large window sills, perfect for flower boxes in the spring. Larda stepped onto a windowsill and pulled herself up to the second story. Then the third. The roof had an awkward angle and jutted out too far for her to catch hold. Above her, tantalizingly out of reach, was a small attic window that would give her easy jumping access to the next roof. The window in front of her was not sealed shut. One corner was lifted enough to slide a knife in. Larda worked it open, each tiny creak or protest of the wood making her certain she would be discovered. When it was wide enough, she pushed herself in feet first. A girl sat in bed, staring directly at Larda. She could not be older than 10, her hair pinned beneath a cap, her nightshirt white.
"If you scream," Larda said, "I will murder your whole family in their sleep."
The girl was solemn and silent in her terror.
"Show me how to get into the attic."
The girl climbed out of bed, shivering, her small feet soundless on the wood floor. She eased open the bedroom door, looking both ways before gesturing for Larda to follow. At the end of the hallway was another door. Larda braced herself to face a foe, but the room was empty save for a jumble of old furniture and a ladder. The girl pointed up. Larda put one hand on the ladder, then paused. She turned back to the girl, who watched her in the same wide-eyed silence she had maintained since Larda first entered her bedroom. Larda reached into her boot and pulled the small knife free. She turned it hilt out and bent down.
"Next time someone comes into your room in the middle of the night, you should be prepared."
"Here." The girl took the knife, staring at it like it was a puzzle. Then she gripped the hilt and nodded.
"Good. I am leaving now. Go back to sleep."
Larda climbed up the ladder and eased open the trapdoor to the attic. The attic window, though, would not open. Cursing her luck, Larda grabbed a chair with a broken leg and smashed the window. She hoped Matei's work had begun in earnest, distracting anyone who might raise an alarm. After pushing the jagged remnants of glass free, Larda climbed out and crouched on the sill. Beneath her, the night waited, dizzying and dark. She jumped. The roof slammed up to meet her faster than she had anticipated, and she nearly rolled off before she caught herself. Then she ran, up and over the peak, gaining momentum before launching herself across the void yearning to claim her. Another roof. This one was angled the opposite way, and the roof after that was several feet higher. Larda ran along the peak, put on a burst of speed, and jumped. Her hands found the edge of the next roof, her legs dangled, her weight threatening to drag her down. Swinging from side to side, she hooked a knee onto the roof and pulled herself up. One more. This time, she crept carefully across the tiles. Though the air was icy, her body itched with sweat. The governor's roof was higher than the one she was on, but it was not her goal. She prowled along the edge between the houses until she found what she was looking for— a window with a small ledge beneath it. She had planned on breaking in, but luck was finally on her side. The casement window was flung wide, and a balding head leaned out, looking down toward the city center and the shouts echoing from that direction. There was a faint glow and the distant sound of shattering glass. For the eternal space between one breath and the next, Larda paused. He looked old and soft, and vulnerable in his baggy nightshirt. He was a husband, a father,
Then he cleared his throat with that same phlegmy rattle he had made while promising to help her and already planning to betray her. Larda jumped the distance, slamming into the governor. They rolled together into the room. Larda recovered immediately and knelt on his chest, her knife to his throat. "Who wanted me dead?" He trembled, eyes crossing when they tried to focus on the knife. She pressed her knife, drawing blood. The governor whimpered the words to a prayer. "God is not here tonight," Larda said. "It is only you and me and my knife. Who wanted me dead?"
"The prince," he said. "The prince of Valahia."
"Why?"
"Because you are a threat."
Larda smiled. She knew that should not please her, but it did. The prince thought her a big enough threat to warrant an assassin. She still had a chance. Where there was fear, there was power. She withdrew the knife and placed it next to the governor's head. He did not move. "A gift for the prince. Tell him I send my regards and I will see him soon. And tell your god to make less flammable churches." Larda slipped out the window, followed by the relieved sobs of the governor. She carried them with her like a gift as she ran across the rooftops, away from the center of Brasov, and toward her men. Five. February. Urbana was a decidedly odd houseguest. In the week she had been living with Nazira and Fatima in Kumal's city house, she had not stopped talking. "If she is a spy," Nazira said, sitting with an exhausted sigh next to Radu in the garden. "She is the worst spy that ever lived. How can she gain any information if she never lets anyone else talk?"
"What does she talk about?" Radu had made himself scarce at the house, wary of drawing too much attention before he was certain the risk was worthwhile.
"Her horrible canons. Nothing else. She pulls sticks from the stove to draw diagrams. On the walls, Radu. The lovely white walls. And then she expects Fatima to wash them, because we have to pretend that Fatima is nothing but a servant."
"I am sorry." Radu knew it was asking much of the two women to let someone else into their private life.
Nazira waved a hand. "I do most of the cleaning after Urbana retires for the night. Fatima understands."
"So, what do you think?"
"I think Urbana is insane, but she may also be a genius. I know nothing of canons, but no one could fake what she is doing. And she is not lying when she says she will build them for anyone willing to fund her. She has been pursuing this her whole life and rejected at every turn. Her only loyalty is to creating the most stunningly large and effective means of killing people the world has ever seen."
Radu tried to temper his excitement. "So you think I should move forward?"
"She is an incredible find. She may even prove invaluable."
Radu could not help his delighted smile. If Radu brought Mehmed something, someone invaluable that he had found on his own. If Radu was the reason that Mehmed finally realized his dream of Constantinople. Nazira put a hand on Radu's cheek.
"Where are you right now?"
Radu shook his head. "Sorry."
"What about the Navy? How is that progressing?"
"As well as can be hoped. Most of the galleys are built, and Suleiman has found sailors to hire. I thought it would be difficult, but the men flocked to him. They foam at the mouth for the riches of Constantinople." Radu sighed. "I hear it among all the soldiers when Constantinople comes up. The golden apple at the center of the city, held by the statue of Justinian. The church is bricked in gold and decorated with jewels. They care nothing for our destiny to have the city, as declared by the prophet, peace be upon him."
Radu frowned.
He also heard much darker talk that focused on the wealth and spoils to be found among citizens of the city. Right now it was spoken half in jest, as no one knew Mehmed meant to go for the city immediately, but it left a bad taste in Radu's mouth.
"But that is not why we have to take the city."
Radu had not really spoken with Nazira about Constantinople before. He was surprised that she had an opinion. "What do you mean?"
"People think it is prophesied because it will bring us wealth and fortune,"
But why would God care about that? I think the city will be ours because we need it to be. As long as Constantinople exists, it will draw crusades. More people who come into our land and kill us simply for being Muslim. I think Constantinople's fall will bring safety and protection. God will give us the city so we can worship in peace. Radu closed his eyes, lifting his face to the sun. He had been so focused on how to help Mehmed take the city, he had stopped thinking about why. Nazira was right. This was not just for Mehmed. This was holy work. He would do it to help protect the faith that had given him so much.
What is the timeline?
Nazira asked, pulling him back to the present.
We are getting close. Everything is nearly in order, but Mehmed will not move until he is certain of all his borders. Hungary still troubles him. Hunyadi is a threat.
And the Italians?
Radu was glad he had opened up to Nazira. It was such a relief to discuss this openly with someone who understood all the pieces in play and who reminded him of what the actual purpose was.
They are too busy quarreling with each other to defend a city with as much history of animosity as Constantinople. Once we secure the waterways, they cannot send aid even if they decide to.
Nazira sighed.
I know it must be done, but I do not look forward to the day that will claim both my brother and my husband for their destinies at the walls of Constantinople. I fear the outcome.
Radu drew her close.
You know, I will make certain you are taken care of. No matter what.
Nazira laughed sadly against his chest.
There you go again, assuming I am worried for myself. You never account for others loving you for you, Radu, rather than what you can do for them. It is my greatest prayer that someday you will know enough of love to recognize when it is freely given.
Radu had no answer. Sometimes Nazira offered too much insight.
I'm going to speak with Urbana then. Thank you.
He kissed Nazira's hand. As he walked inside, he passed Fatima.
Thank you for enduring this, he whispered. Nazira is in the garden, and I will be occupying Urbana for the next few hours. Go spend some time with your wife.
She briefly met his gaze, a grateful smile shaping her kind face.
Good luck, she said.
Your wife may be infertile, Urbana said as she and Radu sat down for a mid-afternoon meal. Radu choked in surprise.
What?
You have been married more than a year. How often do you copulate?
Radu raised his eyes to the ceiling, searching for answers there as he felt his cheeks burning hotter than the furnaces of the foundry.
Are you also an expert in these matters? He asked, trying for a teasing tone.
Urbana frowned.
No. But I wonder about the practicality of continuing on a course that is yielding no results. What about the maid?
Radu panicked. Apparently, they had underestimated Urbana's perceptiveness.
Fatima? He asked, stalling.
How would he explain this? What if she told someone?
She is your servant. I am not unaware of customs here. If she bore you a son, he would be an acceptable heir. And it would be a nice thing for her, too. She would have legal status, and you would not be able to sell her to someone else. I like Fatima. You should consider it.
Radu's voice came out strained, both with relief that Urbana did not realize the truth of his marriage, and embarrassment that this was a conversation she thought appropriate.
I prefer to remain faithful to my wife.
Is that why you have not tried to join my bed? I would have rebuffed you violently, if necessary. But it has puzzled me.
I want to talk about your canons, Radu said, desperate to wrestle the topic away from babies and beds.
Urbana's face fell, then she brought her thick eyebrows together as though bracing for pain.
If you would just let me talk to your sultan,
I want you to make them.
Her eyebrows lifted in surprise.
What?
I want you to make them. All of them. Your Babylon Crusher, yes, but also every cannon you have time and dreams for. I want you to create the greatest artillery the world has ever seen.
Urbana's delight quickly shifted to tired disappointment. I want that too. But neither of us has a foundry or materials or the money to acquire them.
Can you keep a secret?
She licked her lips, pulling them thoughtfully between her teeth.
No, not really.
Radu laughed dryly. Urbana might become invaluable, but not if he was unable to keep her hidden from her lil vizier. Nothing could be easy in his life, apparently.
He rubbed his forehead beneath his turban.
Well, that is a problem, then. Tell me, would it be possible to create these cannons without drawing a lot of attention?
Not with the amount of ore we will need. And we will need men. Lots of men. I cannot do it alone, and I cannot do it just anywhere. That is why I came here. Edirne and Constantinople have the only foundries big enough for me to make my cannons in.
Radu had too many secrets. They were overflowing, and he did not know how he could build an artillery without being noticed, besides which the weight of secrets was wearing on him. He doubted everything now, even Mahmed, which hurt. If Mahmed hid his dealings with the Valachian prince, hid Larda's plight, what else might he be keeping from Radu? Secrets gave everything more power, more potential for devastation and destruction. Radu stood and walked to the window. Nazira and Fatima lay on a blanket in the garden, whispering and laughing. If he had seen them without knowing the truth of their relationship, he would have assumed they were very dear friends. No one questioned why Fatima was always with Nazira, why they were happy to live out in the countryside with no one else around. They hid their love in plain sight.
Urbana, Radu said, an idea forming that he liked the shape of. How do you feel about parties?
I hate them, she said.
What if I said that going to a lot of parties is the price you will have to pay to make your cannons?
Her voice was flat, but determined.
What should I wear?
Six. January. The trek back from interrogating the governor of Brasov was a frigid and lonely one. Larda looked for Matei on the way to camp. At every sound she whipped around, expecting to find him. He did not appear. She was nearly there, the fires in the distance promising rest and warmth, when a horse whinnied in the darkness to her right. She dropped into a crouch, cursing her generosity with the little girl that left her with only one knife out of three she had brought. Why had she felt compelled to give the brat one? The daughter of Valachia wants her knife back. She shuddered at the distant memory. Her father had given her a knife, and it had changed her life. She only hoped her own gift would change that little girl's life, because Larda might very well die for the gesture.
"Quiet, boys!"
a man whispered exaggeratedly, his voice carrying through the night. He spoke Hungarian.
"We seem to have found a small predator. They are very dangerous when cornered."
Larda backed up against a tree, so at least she could face whatever was coming. Her muscles were tight with the cold. She flexed her hands rapidly, trying to work some blood back into them. She heard someone dismount. He made no attempt at hiding his footfalls as he approached. He sat close enough for Larda to see him, but too far for hand-to-hand combat. She would not throw her last knife. If she missed, she would be weaponless. With a groan, he picked up a rock from beneath him and tossed it to the side.
"I have been looking for you, Ladislav Draguja. You are terrorizing the Transylvanians. It is in very poor taste."
Larda lifted her chin defiantly.
"I owe them nothing."
"You were born here. And will I die here?"
The man laughed, pulling something from his vest. Larda tensed, but he leaned forward, striking flint until it caught on a pile of tinder. He fed the fire a few sticks pulled from the frozen forest floor. As the flames grew, the face of her enemy revealed itself,
the face of the man who had driven her father from Turgo Viste and into the arms of the Sultan, where he had abandoned his children. The face of the man who had returned to kill her father and her older brother. Lada leaned back. She did not relax her grip on the knife, but it was an odd relief to have a connection to the man who would be her undoing. Hunyadi. His auburn hair gleamed as red as the fire. His forehead was broad, his eyebrows were strong, and his nose bore the evidence of multiple breakings. He did not seem to have grown older since Lada had last seen him in the throne room at Turgo Viste. He was around the same age her father would have been if Hunyadi had not killed him. It was not fair that Hunyadi had remained unchanged when his actions had altered Lada in unimaginable ways. Hunyadi dipped his head in acknowledgement.
"What mischief have you been up to tonight?"
Lada saw no advantage to lying. "Arson, threats of death, gathering information." Hunyadi sighed.
"You have had a very full night. What did you burn?"
"The cathedral." He coughed in surprise.
"I paid for the new altar."
"It was a poor investment," he snorted.
"I suppose so. I was Vivode of Transylvania for a few years. I have never been so happy to be relieved of power."
"Saxons." He shook his head, breath fogging the night in a silent laugh. Then he put an elbow on one knee, reclining to the side.
"Tell me, what did burning the church give you?"
Lada touched her index finger to the point of her knife. "Distraction, so I could accomplish my task. And satisfaction."
Somehow I doubt that anything here is going to satisfy you. I know you were sent for the Valachian throne. Are you still in league with the Sultan?"
Lada twirled her knife. "Does it look like I serve the Ottomans?"
"So you are not sending updates to him on where you are and what you are doing?"
Lada was glad the firelight covered her flush of humiliation. Write to Mahmed and admit her failures? Never.
"No. He has been keeping track of you."
Hunyadi held out a thin sheaf of parchment. It was crowded with spidery writing. One corner was blotted and darkened with a few large splashes of ink. Lada squinted. Not ink. Blood.
"We found this on a wounded man following you. It is a letter to the Sultan, detailing everything you are doing."
"Matei," Lada said. So that was why he had not caught up to her. He could not. She breathed something as close to a prayer of relief as she was capable of, that she had left Bogdan behind. It surprised her how glad she was that he was safe. She did not dwell on it.
"What did you do with my man?" "He fought. We killed him."
Lada nodded numbly. Matei was dead, wounded in Brasov, finished by Hunyadi. And carrying a letter to Mahmed, how long had he been updating Mahmed on her? How much did Mahmed know? And whom should she be most angry with? Mahmed for spying on her, Matei for betraying her, or herself for trusting Matei? Or herself for having so many miserable failures to write of. Matei's betrayal cut deep, though. She had chosen Valachians precisely because she assumed they would be as eager as she was to sever their Ottoman ties. But apparently Matei's hunger had extended beyond what Lada could provide. "I did not know," he reported to Mahmed.
"I thought as much from the contents of the letter. So you are not working for the Sultan, but you call him by his name. You know him, his temperament, his tactics."
This felt both dangerous and promising. "Better than anyone."
"In that case, I have another letter for you."
Hunyadi dropped Matei's letter in the fire. Lada's fingers reflexively stretched toward it. She wanted to know how her life would read when being looked at by Mahmed. But it was too late. Hunyadi reached into his vest and withdrew an envelope. He tossed it in front of Lada. Puzzled, she picked it up, The seal was broken. We got this one off a Turk asking around for your whereabouts.
It is from your brother.
Bonyardi spoke as pleasantly as if they were discussing the weather over a meal.
He wonders how you fare, and fears for your safety. He even suggests returning to Edirne. He says they are having the most wonderful parties under Mahmed's rule.
Lada snorted. He says that only because he knows nothing could keep me farther away than the promise of parties. Still, Lada tucked the letter into her shirt against her heart, beneath the necklace Radu had given her. Did he know everything, too? Were none of her humiliations private? Hunyadi stood, holding out a gloved hand. He was close enough to strike. One quick thrust of her knife, and she could avenge her father and her older brother, Machia. Blood for her blood. For his betrayal, Matei could go unavenged.
Come, Hunyadi said. I have an offer for you.
Lada's knife paused. Her father had died doing what he always did.
Running. And she had never cared for Machia anyway. She took Hunyadi's hand.
Seven. February to March. Everyone who mattered in Edirne was around the massive table. Valets, beys, pashas, viziers, and a smattering of their wives. Even a few daughters, hopeful of catching the eye of someone important. One such daughter had been trying to attract Radu's attention all evening, but he knew her father was already firmly in support of Mahmed, so there was no reason to be cruel and indulge her. Sully, too, was here, Halil's second son, the only person Radu had ever kissed. But Sully had long since given up trying to speak to Radu. Radu could not even look at him without feeling a sick twist of guilt, and so he had gotten very good at letting his eyes pass over the other man's head. They all reclined on pillows, a sumptuous spread laid out in front of them. Next to Radu, Urbana kept shifting, trying to get comfortable in her stiff European clothing. She stood out terribly, scowling and muttering to herself in Hungarian. If she caught anyone's eye, it was definitely not in a flirtatious way. She looked like she wanted to strangle someone. It made Radu miss Lada.
Sit still, Radu whispered, looking toward the head of the table.
He was seated far from where Mahmed lounged, on a higher level than anyone else. A servant fanned the sultan, while behind him lingered the lonely stool attendant. And on the sultan's right, Halil Vizier. Radu waited, anxious to the point of giddiness.
What is this?
Urbana complained, dipping a finger in one of the cool, creamy sauces for the meat.
I am tired of these parties. Why do I have to be here when I could be working?
Radu hushed her as Mahmed stood. My friends, Mahmed said, extending his arms to take in the entire room. This is a night for celebration. Tonight, I honor three of my greatest advisers. Their wisdom gives me strength. Their guidance builds my legacy. And tonight, I dedicate that legacy to the world. Zarganos Pasha. Zarika Pasha. He nodded at the two men to his immediate left, men Radu knew to be deeply loyal and committed to the cause of taking Constantinople. Kumal was gone, already on sight.
And my most important advisor, Halil Vizier.
Halil flushed a deep red, his expression that of a child who had gotten away with some feat of naughtiness. He bowed his head and put a hand over his heart.
To honor you, my three wisest, I am building a fortress with a tower named for each of you. Your might will reach up to the very sky. Your wisdom will watch over our land forever. You three will be my towers of strength, my sentinels.
The three men bowed even deeper.
For this honor, I would pay everything I own, Zarganos Pasha said.
Mahmed laughed brightly.
Well, that is good to hear, because you will each be in charge of financing and constructing your tower. I would not trust your legacies with anyone else.
Halil Vizier looked slightly less pleased, but displeasure marred his visage only briefly. This was a tremendous honor,
and further proof that his hold on Mahmed was tighter than ever, that Mahmed announced it in front of every important person in the empire, doubtless did not escape Halil's notice. Halil nodded.
Of course, my sultan. Yours will be the most vital tower. And the largest.
Mahmed took Halil's hand, squeezing it warmly. For him to touch another man was a gesture of the highest regard. Halil swept his eyes across the room, exulting in the moment. Mahmed released Halil's hand and sat. His tone became less formal.
We begin construction immediately. The fortress will be called the Rumeli Hisar.
Halil's eyebrows drew together.
Rumeli Hisar. Like your grandfather's fortress on the Bosporus Strait. The Anadulu Hisar.
Yes, precisely. Mahmed gestured to a servant to refill his glass.
I have already moved the men into place, and the stones are being brought in as we speak. Kumal Pasha is there to direct construction.
Where? Halil wiped at his forehead, where sweat was beginning to bead beneath his turban.
Where will the Rumeli Hisar be built?
Mahmed waved dismissively with the flatbread in his hand.
Across from the Anadulu Hisar.
Across?
But that is Constantinople's land.
Mahmed let out a burst of laughter.
It belongs to a few scrappy goats. There is nothing there.
Yet.
But soon the foundation of a fortress honoring you will displace those goats. The fortresses will wink at each other from across the water of the Bosporus Strait. Their cannons could meet in the middle, I think.
Mahmed laughed again.
We will have to try it out after your tower has been built.
This time, the deep flush on Halil's face was not one of pleasure. His mouth opened and closed as he struggled to find a way out of the trap Radu and Mahmed had set. But it was too late. He had agreed to the fortress in front of everyone, had shown nothing but support. He had even agreed to pay for it. If he backed out now, he would have to say why. And he could not challenge Mahmed on Constantinople outright. He had no solid proof that Mahmed meant to attack, and he had to keep his own connections to Emperor Constantine secret. Halil's options were dwindling, and would dwindle further when his allies in Constantine's court heard that a tower built on their land bore Halil's name. Secrets made information more powerful and suspect. The best way to keep the fortress safe from Halil's machinations was to make him intimately and inescapably involved in its construction. It was the same method Radu was applying to the artillery, inspired by Nazira and Fatima's relationship, hiding in plain sight.
"What is so funny?"
Urbana said, scowling.
"I did not understand any of that. Why are you smiling?"
"Because I am pleased with tonight's events," she sighed, picking at the bones of the unfortunate fowl on her plate.
"I still do not understand why I have to be here. We never even speak to the Sultan."
"You are here so that everyone sees you are my special project. I want the whole city gossiping about how foolish I am, hiring a woman to make the largest cannon in the world to try to impress the Sultan. I intend to subject us both to ridicule." Her scowl deepened.
"Why would you do that?"
"So that no one pays any attention until we succeed." For the first time that night, Urbana smiled. She snapped a bone off the chicken. Radu nudged her with his elbow.
"Imagine how surprised they will be when the Sultan has the most advanced artillery in the world, built by a woman, and the most handsome and useless foreigner in the empire."
He stood. "Come, I need to introduce you to everyone and tell them how we are designing a cannon so big it could puncture a hole in the bottom of the Black Sea and drain it dry." Urbana grimaced, but nodded.
"Lead on."
Later that week, Radu pulled aside the tapestry to leave his update on Urbana's progress and the Navy's readiness. He was so shocked to find Mahmed sitting in the room that he barely stifled a cry.
"Radu," Mahmed grinned, "you are very late."
"What is wrong?"
Nothing. I have something for you. Mahmed held out a letter. It was addressed to Radu in a hand like someone had taken a blade and dipped it in ink. The part of his heart that was permanently vacant hurt as it beat again. He turned the parchment over to find it had been sealed by a knife tip pressed into wax.
Lada, he whispered, running his fingers over the red seal.
It arrived this morning. Mahmed's voice was carefully neutral. Did you write her? Yes, after I found out she was not on the throne. I had given up hope that the messenger would ever find her.
Radu would have preferred to read privately, but he could not bear to leave this gift of time with Mahmed. But the way Mahmed's eyes were fixed on the letter, like a starving man on a circle of bread, hurt. All this time they had spent apart, all these times he had never been waiting for Radu. Mahmed was here only for Lada. He was still in love with her. They never spoke of her, but it was inescapable. Perhaps since she left before Mahmed could claim her, he would long for her forever. The same way he was fixated on Constantinople, simply because it was not his, but he felt it should be. According to Islam, though, Mahmed could not consummate his relationship with Lada. It was forbidden outside of marriage or official concubines. Lada had been inside Mahmed's harem, though, which legally made her part of it. There was always a way forward for Mahmed and Lada. Radu hung his head. What did he hope his future would be? To stand forever at Mahmed's side? Beloved friend? Trusted advisor? He had told Nazira it would be enough. It would never be enough. Mahmed put a hand on Radu's shoulder. The jolt of the touch went so much deeper than the light pressure of his fingers. Are you well, my friend? Radu cleared his throat, nodding. He tore open the letter with more force than was needed. It was addressed in typically sentimental style. To my only brother, Radu. It had been more honest than his greeting to her.
What does she say? Mahmed asked, perfectly still. He may as well have been bounding around the room, for all his stillness hid his anxiety.
Radu read aloud, his voice flat from the exhaustion of his emotions. I was surprised to receive your letter. I am sorry to report that the messenger you sent is dead. I did not kill him. I suppose, in a way, you did, for sending him here. Radu paused, narrowing his eyes in annoyance both at Lada's words and at the fact that she might have a point. Had he sacrificed a life simply to send a letter to his sister?
She teases you, Mahmed said. I am sure the messenger is fine. Go on.
In turn, I will surprise you by telling you I am with Hunyadi. He found me in Transylvania, and we declined to murder each other. I wondered if I was being disloyal to our father and brother, but they are dead, and so cannot complain. He invited my company to join his. I do not know his motives, but I accepted. I will finally have an ally worth something. If I can convince Hunyadi to support me, I can take the throne. I know it. But after that, I do not have the skill for nobility. I am a blunt weapon. I need a surgeon. I am tired of being the right hand to powerful men. I want you as my right hand. I have seen you move among nobility as easily as a hawk cuts through the air. Cut through the boyars for me. Come home, Radu. Help me. Valahia belongs to us. And I will not be complete without you. Radu paused, shocked.
And then she signs her name.
He did not say how she signed it. Lada, on the ice and in need of your hand, this time. With one line she had dragged him back to his helpless childhood, when he had needed rescuing after going out too far on the ice. And he could not quite believe it. She was asking him for help. She recognized that he was good at something she was not. Mahmed had been right. Lada needed him to secure her path to power. For a few silent, painful moments, he considered it. She was his sister. She had never asked him for anything. She had expected him to come along initially because she thought he should, not because she wanted him to. Now, though, will you go to her? Radu looked up, surprised. Mahmed's voice was as quiet as his own had been, as carefully devoid of emotion. But Radu knew his friend's face better than anything on earth. He had studied it, worshipped it, and Mahmed could not hide his fear and anguish. It was balm to Radu's soul, such a tremendous relief that Radu let out a shaky laugh. Lada was not the only Dracul who mattered to Mahmed. No. No, of course not. Mahmed's shoulders relaxed, the tension draining from his face. He again put a hand on Radu's shoulder, then took the letter from him. And Radu was happy, standing there with his friend, because as much as it meant to be valued by his weapon of a sister, it was not where he belonged. She wanted him to achieve her goals, but as always, she discounted his feelings. He had worked too long and hard here to abandon it all in pursuit of her dream. It had never been his dream. Lada would be hurt by his decision. The thought made him feel oddly powerful. He hated that about himself, but he could not avoid it. Lada wanted him, and Mahmed wanted him. He would choose Mahmed. He could not do anything else. Mahmed tapped his finger against the page. It is very interesting that she is in Hunyadi's inner circle. After everything he did to your father and brother. Radu was surprised too, but it made a sort of sense. Lada only holds grudges that are useful to her. In a way, our father's death freed her. She might even be grateful to Hunyadi. Regardless if she can learn from him and use him to gain power, she will forgive him anything. Mahmed said. His finger traced Hunyadi's name. Radu wanted the letter back. He wanted to read again how he could do things his strong, vicious sister never could. He wanted to hold the letter and remember the fear on Mahmed's face when he thought Radu would choose to leave. That fear was enough to give Radu hope. He might have his own dream yet. February 8. A week into Lada's travels with the Hungarians, Hunyadi rode along the edge of camp where her men had set up. He shouted a command in Hungarian to pack up. No one responded. He looked to Lada. They had not spoken much, and Lada was beginning to question her rashness in sending Bogdan to find someone to carry a letter to Radu. Maybe she had written too soon of Hunyadi as her ally, and if anything happened to Bogdan, she would never forgive herself. He was the one piece of her childhood she had managed to hold on to. She could not bear to lose him, too. The absence of Bogdan reminded Lada of the absence of the other two men who mattered most to her. But soon Radu would receive her letter and join them. The other man she chose not to dwell on. Hunyadi shouted the order again.
"Why do your men not obey?"
he asked. Lada raised an eyebrow. "They do not speak Hungarian." He shouted the same command in Turkish. As one, the men looked at him. No one moved. Lada narrowed her eyes.
"And they do not answer to Turkish."
Hunyadi frowned, tugging at his beard.
"Then how do I command them?"
"You do not."
"I do."
In Valachian, she commanded her men to pack up. Immediately they sprang into efficient, well-practiced action. Hunyadi watched, his expression thoughtful. Lada rode with more cheer after that. She would prove herself to him yet. Later that day, Hunyadi found Lada riding next to Stefan and Nikolai near the back of the company. Stefan veered his horse away, giving Hunyadi space.
"Your men are very disciplined,"
Hunyadi said, scratching his beard. He toyed with it constantly. Lada wondered if it was because as a young man he had not been allowed a beard. He had fought long and hard to move from being the son of peasant farmers
to one of the strongest leaders on the borders of the Ottoman Empire. She supposed he had every right to be amused by and affectionate toward his beard. Or perhaps beards were just itchy.
"We were well trained," Lada answered in Vlahian.
Hunyadi responded in the same language.
"I always prefer fighting Spahis to Yanacheris. Yanacheris are so much fiercer."
Nikolai smiled wryly.
"That is one of the benefits of a slave force that can have neither possessions nor families. It is easy to be fearless when you have nothing to lose."
Hunyadi grunted. Pointing to Nikolai's prominent scar, he asked,
"Where did you get that?"
His Wallachian accent was so bad that it hurt Lada to hear him speak. Nikolai's smile broadened, stretching his scar tight and white.
"At Varna, from a Hungarian, right before we killed your king."
Lada's hands went to her wrists, ready to defend Nikolai. To her surprise, Hunyadi laughed.
"Oh, Varna, that was a disaster."
He shifted back into Hungarian.
"Set me back a few years. We still have not recovered from the loss of our king. Our new one, Ladislas Postumus, is not exactly ideal."
His expression grew far away and thoughtful.
"He could be replaced."
Lada pounced on his tone before she could think better of it. "You?" Hunyadi had been a prince of Transylvania. He was beloved by his people and a fearsome military force, if he were king and her ally. The part of the throne of Wallachia opened before her, bathed in golden light. Until Hunyadi laughed, puncturing her hopes and bringing darkness crashing back down.
"Me, king? No, I have tried a throne. It turns out I am not fond of sitting, no matter what the seat may be."
Lada slouched moodily in her saddle. Hunyadi would still be a strong ally, but a king was better.
"Your people would be fortunate to have such a man as their king."
Hunyadi clapped a hand on her shoulder.
"I am a soldier. I am not made for politics and courts. My son Matthias, on the other hand, has been raised in them. He will go far and do greater things than I ever could."
Hunyadi beamed.
"He is my greatest triumph. And he is very handsome."
Lada frowned, unsure what that had to do with Matthias's merits. She had seen, though, how many doors opened for Radu because of his face.
"I am sure that will be useful to him."
"He needs a strong wife, someone who can temper his extravagances, help steer him."
"He will need a good alliance."
If Matthias wanted to continue to rise within the Hungarian courts, he would have to bring some sort of power with him. Hunyadi had no family name, no history. He had land and wealth, yes, but they were new, and newness was not something to be proud of in the world of nobility. Hunyadi patted her shoulder again.
"I am less concerned with alliances. Those come and go. But strength of character, that cannot be valued enough."
Hunyadi rode away, with Lada staring at his back in confusion.
"Does he want me to find his son a wife?"
she asked, turning to Stefan, who had been leaning over to Nikolai and whispering. Stefan pretended not to speak Hungarian, but he understood it. Nikolai's face was purpling from the effort of holding something back. Finally, it escaped in a strangled, airy laugh.
"Lada, my darling dragon, he wants you to be his son's wife."
"The devil take him,"
she snapped. Anger and humiliation washed through her. All this time, Hunyadi had been viewing her as merely a womb. How could she make the world see her as she saw herself?
"And the devil take his son too."
She rubbed her forehead wearily. No wonder he had tried to command her men. He probably already viewed them as his own, some sort of dowry.
"Where exactly are we?"
Nikolai pulled closer to her.
"Near Bulgaria."
Staring bleakly at the winter-dead trees around them, Lada did not know what to do. Kill Hunyadi and move on? Marry his son for a chance at the Hungarian throne? Would that bring her closer to Wallachia, or take her even further away?
It was the same choice she had faced before, the only choice ever given to her. Take what little power you can through a man. If she had known this would be her fate over and over, she would have stayed with Mahmed.